This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
The trip he was referring to, it's this coming Friday unless plans change. And it's Donald Trump's first trip abroad as president, and it's quite a trip. He's starting in Saudi Arabia, the birthplace of Islam, then he goes to Israel, and then to the Vatican and Europe. My colleague Robin Wright is a veteran foreign correspondent with a specialty in the Middle East. Robin, how much is the trip symbolic with these three religious destinations, and how much does he want to achieve in concrete terms?
The Trump administration wants to try to achieve four goals. One is to try to foster a peace process. The second is to fight both ISIS and al-Qaeda, but extremism writ large, to confront Iran and create a coalition able to kind of speak with one voice, countering predominantly Shiite Iran, and again, to create a body that might be more engaged in regional alliances, regional security, rather than having the United States repeatedly have to send troops in. So there are four kind of broad goals that the administration hopes to achieve during that leg of the trip.
Now, Robin, this trip is coming at a moment of incredible political turmoil. We've just seen the firing of the FBI director, James Comey, which is nearly unprecedented. On the National Security Council, Michael Flynn was gone in less than a month. Steve Bannon was appointed, then unappointed to the NSC. And now the rumors are that H.R. McMaster is on the outs with the President of the United States. How does that kind of turmoil affect relations with other powers?
Well, first of all, it creates a difficulty in just getting together your own staff to come up with a policy. The review process is still underway. We don't have the outlines of specific goals for many parts of the world. So
is that unusual in a first term, in the first months of a first term?
Well, it often takes up to 6 months, but the process was delayed first by Flynn's firing and then by the marginalization of Bannon and H.R. McMaster trying to assert himself. And so this is, you know, you've got staffing issues. Then you've got the policy review. And there have been tensions, as you point out, between McMaster and Trump. There are times that the president has apparently shouted at McMaster. He feels like he's being lectured to. And I think McMaster feels he has quite a task in educating the president about some of the nuances of the very many flashpoints, not just in the Middle East, but in whether it's North Korea and the role that China's going to play, the collapse of Venezuela. You know, we're facing a really tumultuous period in world history.
Robin, he's going to Jerusalem. He's going to visit Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel. He's just met with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader. And yet we hear that he's put Jared Kushner, of all people, in charge of a Middle East peace process. Is the United States serious at all about reengaging yet again in negotiations for a two-state solution? Or are they quietly giving up the ghost and ceding to Netanyahu that they're just going to play for the status quo ante for some time to come?
I think the White House actually has illusions that it can move forward the peace process. The president said recently that the peace process was not as difficult as people have thought, which of course has led to a huge reaction both in the region and among kind of foreign policy experts in Washington.
He thought the same thing about health care and any number of issues, that it was all a cinch.
Yes. And I think this is where you have a president who is very naive on foreign policy, doesn't really know the world very well. The fact that he picked Saudi Arabia as his first stop alone is very telling. This is one of the most repressive governments in the world. George Bush didn't go to Saudi Arabia until his last year in office. This is also a tumultuous time inside the kingdom itself. So, and the idea that the kingdom was going to deal with Israel is, I think, naive as well. So the idea that there are going to be transactional achievements on this trip, I think, is an illusion.
Who is Donald Trump where foreign policy is concerned? He uses the word transactional all the time, deal-making all the time. You rarely hear about the idea of advancing American values, human rights, democracy, the interventionist model that he's criticized. In practice, though, are his goals any different than Obama's were?
Well, when it comes to actual decisions, he often has charted the same course that Obama did. For example, the decision to arm the Kurds in Syria so they could take on ISIS in its capital was a policy developed by the Obama administration. The Obama administration also reached out to China as the key to North Korea, as did previous Republican administrations. And yet, there is a big distinction, and that is the kind of Darwinian bottom line in the president's thinking when it comes to dealing with some of the world's most famous dictators, whether it's Duterte in the Philippines or Erdogan, whom he's going to host in Washington next week, President Sisi from Egypt. The human rights issue that so defined the Obama administration and the nation-building idea of the Bush administration has basically been quite abandoned.
Finally, some of President Trump's advisors, including Michael Anton, with whom we've talked, use the phrase strategic ambiguity to describe President Trump's frequent contradictions and even the incoherence of his policy discussions and his tweets and all the rest. Is that a thing, strategic ambiguity? Is it an advantage, or are our allies and our enemies even reading this as just pure chaos in the White House?
I think there's a reading that it's chaos. The term the administration likes to use is that President Trump is a disruptive leader. And they think of this in a positive way, that he's disrupting the kind of rules of the game of the past, charting a different course. But to the outside world, people are unclear about what's happening. There's a sense that the administration doesn't really know what it's talking about, hasn't decided on policies, and that the president is most influenced by the last person he spoke to. And an uncertainty about what this means for the world. The president can only get away with this for so long before it diminishes America's role in the world or the perception of America's role on some of these big, broader issues.
Robin Wright, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
You can find Robin's latest writing on everything from immigration bans to saving the remaining animals at the Mosul Zoo by visiting NewYorkerRadio.org.